Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, government is warned about possible civil unrest as more Ukrainians arrive in Ireland, but some are asking why all people fleeing war aren't treated the same. Is it time to lift the pay cap for senior Irish banking staff? We'll debate. Parents of some children with cystic fibrosis worry that a row over money could leave them without a vital treatment drug. We'll hear about that a little bit later on. Popular holiday destinations have become overexposed, leading to damaging consequences. Fionn Davenport has some great alternatives for you to consider. And David Coleman will be here with parenting advice later on. So if you have any questions for David, do get in touch now. The number 51551 for your texts. You can email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. First, Dara O'Brien, Minister for Housing, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here in the studio this morning. The first thing I want to ask you about is the front page of the Daily Mail. This story that an Oireachtas member based in the west of the country slept in his car twice overnight because he couldn't find any accommodation in Dublin. And he says, even at €200 a night, people can't seem to be able to get a room. I slept in the car after exhaustive attempts to find a place. How do you respond to that happening under your watch?
Well, I'm not aware of the individual case, and the first I saw of it was this morning. Now, I think the reference within the article, from what I've seen, is hotel accommodation. Obviously, for a TD who's coming up from the West, many will stay in hotels or apartments, or they'll share. So I'm not familiar with the specifics of the case. Obviously, a lot of our accommodation right now has been taken up, understandably, by the initial response to the war in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And many hotels are contracted in the short term to actually take our friends from Ukraine and to look after them and to provide them shelter. I haven't had instances like this brought to me before, okay, in relation to a TD or otherwise, you know, actually seeking hotel accommodation, which is obviously to stay for a night or two.
So none of your colleagues have come to you and said they've had a problem getting accommodation?
No, people regularly have problems getting accommodation, and other TDs and senators will say this to you as it comes into the summer. You know, people would have stayed in particular hotels for a period of time for months, and then it comes into the summer months and concerts and matches and all those type of things. There tends to be a change then where people have to move out of existing accommodation and move into others. I think, look, that obviously that situation is a serious one, but we have a number of serious challenges across the board in housing.
Yeah, and we'll get to all of those. But I mean, just €200 a night is what this person was willing to pay. Couldn't get a room in Dublin and slept in the car. Are you saying that you don't accept that this person made exhaustive attempts to find a place?
No, I didn't say that at all, actually. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it obviously, when one is looking within the city centre and in proximity to Leinster House, which may have been the need for this TD to do that, they may have found it difficult, obviously did.
But you don't accept that in the whole of Dublin there wouldn't have been a room for a night for €200?
I know. I'm not disputing what the TD has said. It's the first I've seen of it is the story on the front of the Mail. Now, so I'm not going to question what mm-hmm. happened to them. Obviously, what they're saying is the experience they've had.
But you accept it could happen, that it mightn't be possible to find somewhere to stay in Dublin for €200.
Right within the city centre for €200. Yes, I accept that that's difficult. I don't manage hotels myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not the minister with responsibility for hotels. But what I would say to you as well, I live about nine miles from the centre of Dublin as well. There is hotel accommodation outside that. But has that hotel accommodation been put under mm-hmm. pressure because of the state correctly our response to housing people and giving accommodation to people who've come in from Ukraine, over 30,000 people. Now, the state have so far accommodated over two-thirds of those. The other one-third have been accommodated with family members and that. And we're working through the pledges. Mm-hmm. Roderick O'Gorman is, where I'm looking at the more medium-term supports, yes, about refurbishment of buildings within the city centre and right across the country, will free up some of the other emergency accommodation
that's
there.
Again.
So I'm not familiar with that individual's personal circumstance either. So that's as much as I can say on that.
On the accommodation for Ukrainians and the services that you've outlined there, this report in the Sunday Independent that suggested that this entire situation poses a risk to social cohesion and integration. What does that mean? What were you told? What have you been warned might happen?
No, I think we've got to make sure that we haven't been warned about an instance whereby there would be a breakout of social unrest on the basis of us housing.
That's what the paper said. Well, cross-government risk analysis warned Cabinet that there could be problems.
When you get a risk analysis on any issue, like when we'd have in the pandemic, it will actually put forward the different scenarios that could be available, from the most extreme to more realistic as well. There is no question that the response that we have to help our friends from the Ukraine, we have to ensure that that's in addition to what we're doing on housing. And I've been at pains to say that. So we protect the Housing for All plan. The additional accommodation that we're providing, many of it is temporary or semi-permanent, is in addition to what we're doing. We're, you know, so, and in some instances, the repurposing of buildings, which we're working through at the moment, to more semi-permanent accommodation. These are the larger buildings right across the country, such as old schools, old hospitals, and that type of thing, you know, could be used potentially in the future for other emergencies as well. So in many instances, the work that we're doing in some ways may actually help to assist the situation into the future. But I'm acutely aware...
For everyone.
Yeah, but I'm acutely aware of the need to, in relation to providing accommodation for our friends from Ukraine, that that is in addition to what we're doing on housing, which, like, we're going to deliver 9,000 new build social homes this year. They're all for people who are already on the social housing list. The 2,500 vacant social homes, which we're bringing back in this year, and that's on top of 6,000 we brought back in the last 2 years, will be for people on the social housing list.
I want to come back to that report, though, because it says the current humanitarian response could become unsustainable in the coming weeks, with a risk that those displaced by the war may not be able to secure accommodation, education or income support or access employment. Now, does that mean that if resources come under pressure, it'll be the refugees that you'll be saying to, sorry, we don't have enough resources to go around?
No.
And you'll be prioritising resources for local people?
Well, take a couple of the points that you've raised there, particularly around education. Norma Foley's already been on saying that every single Ukrainian child who sought education and sought a school has actually got a school place and is placed already.
Up to now.
Yeah, but let's remember, Claire, what this is. This is, we're responding to the single biggest movement of people across the continent of Europe since World War II. This is a response to a war. It's an emergency response. And actually, so far heretofore, I think the state has responded very well, that we've been able to accommodate everyone who's come in, provide the social welfare supports that we have done. Everyone who's come in as PPS numbers has been getting their payments. Roderick O'Gorman and the team are working through the pledges, and more people are now being placed in pledged accommodation. So no, I don't see a situation where that will happen, because
But you have been warned that it could happen. There could be social unrest.
But Claire, we look at all different scenarios potentially, that if, let's say, the state stopped tomorrow morning providing any type of support, of course that would pose a problem. That's not going to happen. I'm confident in the response that we have and how that will ramp up further in relation, as I mentioned earlier on, repurposing of buildings, more semi-permanent accommodation where we'll be able to move people out of hotels and get them into places where they want to be on a more permanent basis. You've also mentioned in relation to employment, many of our friends from Ukraine are already employed, have come over here, and they're being employed and they're being supported to do that. So I think the extreme sort of scenarios that may be painted in a risk assessment, you know, that in my view will not come to bear.
The last time you were here, you said that there may be the need for an additional 35,000 homes over the lifetime of the Housing for All plan. Is that still the figure you have in mind, or has that changed now?
Well, it looks, firstly, in relation to the Housing for All plan, if I could say, that's about providing 300,000 new homes, both social, affordable and private, between now and 2030. And we're making progress in that space. We've had significant increases in housing completions just over the last year, increases in planning permissions.
And we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
But on the 35,000, you said the last time that's going to be the additional need. Has that changed?
I would see it potentially being less than that. And the reason being, now no one knows the course of the war and what's happening in the Donbass, but we have certainly seen a significant reduction in the number of people coming in from Ukraine. There's no question of that. When I was on your show the last time, we were, in some instances, we had a week where we had nearly 1,000 people a day coming in. That has certainly slowed down.
So have you got a number on the additional housing need?
I don't actually think it's helpful in one respect, that what I'm saying is we're responding. I know what
you said it the last time.
Yeah, I did. It's hard to be able to quantify exactly what the additional need will be. But if I could say this, already through the work that we're doing on repurposing of buildings, we worked through the 500 buildings that we got first. We've handed over 89 of them now to the emergency response teams. That provides about 5,300 bed spaces there already, 80% of which of those are being occupied. So we're seeing people moving out of the emergency piece into the more semi-permanent. We have another tranche of buildings that we're working on now, some of which were identified in the memo that I brought into government, like old hospitals, older schools and those type of things, which we're starting to work on, which will be able to provide partitioned accommodation for people, where there will be, you know, privacy for families, security for families, and to be able to provide that wraparound supports
kind of dormitory style.
In some instances, yes, Claire, it will be. And
so the 35,000 then, where?
Well, look, I would think at the moment we right now have been able to respond to the needs of everyone who's come into the country. We're now looking at a situation whereby we have, you know, in the hundreds each day coming in. I saw figures last week of about 140 to 150 people coming in, and we're working through accommodating that. If the situation with regard to the war changes, and none of us will know what Russia will necessarily do next, will that lead to a further influx of displaced persons from Ukraine? All I'm saying to you is that we're prepared for every eventuality.
So you said 35,000 the last time.
I did, yes.
And what are you saying today?
Well, today, based on the figures that we have, it will be less than that, okay? But what I'm saying, my main focus is ensuring that we're providing more permanent and semi-permanent accommodation for people from Ukraine who currently right now are in hotels, many of which are in guest houses.
I don't understand how you could put 35,000 the last time, and you can't give me any figure
today.
Well,
Claire, we put 35,000 on the basis of over 100,000 people coming in, and that was it. And we were getting projections of between 100,000 and 200,000 people. And to be fair, that was at the start of the crisis. We're looking at how all of Europe is responding to this too. We have done more, and we continue to do what is right by ensuring that there's no restrictions on people from Ukraine coming in here.
And you still think that's the right strategy?
I do, yes. I absolutely do. And I firmly believe that as well, because
Because there are those who say that we should be able to look after the people who we are welcoming in here.
Yes. And we
and there
are.
May come a point where we can't do that because we don't have the resources.
So what are we saying? Do we just stop now?
We started this conversation saying that you've been warned as a government about possible social unrest.
What I'm saying to you is this: we will respond to the needs of those coming in from Ukraine, whilst also ensuring that we deliver our own housing plan, that we deliver more social homes than have been done in years. 9,000 new builds this year, and when we do that, will be the single biggest delivery of social housing in 1 year since the foundation of the state.
Let's talk about housing for all now. Can we move on to that? Because you touched on it there before, and you have 20 billion euro for the plan up to 2030. The budget, the targets, they were before everything changed. We've had massive inflation increases, construction costs have gone up, the war in Ukraine, as we spoke about. So is that budget changing or are the targets changing?
Targets aren't changing. It's 4 billion a year, actually, in state-led funding, which will unlock another 8 billion. So to build 33,000 homes a year where we need to get to, we need 4 billion, which we're putting forward on behalf of the state to deliver the social and affordable housing I spoke about, and another 8 billion euro in private funding as well. So about 12 billion a year is what we need to have a stable and secure housing sector. The targets have not changed. Challenges, you know, do come about.
Have gone up.
Yes, costs have gone up. And because we have a multi-annual plan, and that we're funded 4 billion euro a year right to 2030, we have flexibility within that plan too. Already in relation to the near-term inflation that we've seen, Michael McGrath has done a significant amount of work, and government have agreed a package to assist those in delivery of both homes and strategic infrastructure.
Will you be able to draw down, front-load that?
We will manage that within our current budget, okay? And that is what's agreed, but we're allowing a burden sharing between the government and the construction sector, because we don't want to see social or affordable housing schemes stop because of the real issues with regard to near-term inflation. We obviously all hope that in time will level out, but we have responded to ensure.
So you're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. Might draw down 6 billion this year, meaning in a few years' time you'll only have 2 billion to draw down.
Within our current budget for this year, you see, the good thing about Housing for All is it's fully funded for the term of the plan, right up to 2026, actually, for the term of this government. So we know what capital we have.
Yeah, but you can't exceed 4 billion per year.
We've flexibility within the 4 billion as well. And we've brought forward measures, as I already mentioned, in relation to inflation, that probably for the first few months will cost between 30 and 40 million. So that's what we're talking about in the context of the overall budget. Mm-hmm. I'll manage that within housing, as Norma Foley will manage that within education, or Stephen Donnelly within health. and it continues and remains under review as we move forward. But what we want to ensure is that the pipeline that we have, which is the strongest affordable and social housing pipeline that we've seen in decades, is actually delivered upon. And what is good to see as well, and on the private housing side, that we are seeing very significant increases in commencements. Like, we've had nearly 36,000 commencements in the year March 2022. That's the highest amount since 2011.
Yeah, commencements is one thing though, but the Construction Industry Federation has said completion times now are up to 26 weeks in some cases.
In some instances, look, these are challenges that are there.
6 months.
Yeah. Claire, I visit sites all over the country. I've literally been in every county in the Republic visiting sites and talking to contractors and talking to councils and people who are delivering homes, and most importantly, talking to the people who are getting those homes, which is great to see. Our job is to manage those challenges as we move through, and we're doing that. There will be, with the initiatives that we brought forward, we will ensure that there does not need to be any ceasing of construction, certainly within the residential area. We do not see that happening. That's why we've brought forward this measure to provide a burden sharing of 70% with the state and 30% with the sector. That has been broadly welcomed. I note the report from CIF. I'll read it in more detail, but we're, you know, in regular contact with our partners, our delivery partners, such as the approved housing bodies, our local authorities, and indeed the construction sector. And we will work through these issues.
What about the planning delays? 106 weeks, according to some, I read at the weekend.
Look, we've, firstly, in relation to planning, you know, there's a lot of work happening within both the local authorities and on Bord Pleanála, and I've given additional posts within the board. We are nearly concluding a full planning review, which is 5 years' work in 9 months, being headed up by the Attorney General. I'll have a consolidated piece of legislation in the autumn, which will deal with a lot of the anomalies that are there within the planning system.
So you're frustrated with
we need an efficient planning system, okay, and an efficient planning system that is fit for purpose.
And it's not.
And in some instances, we've seen inordinate delays for many reasons, not necessarily because of the people working within the sector, but for many other reasons. It has been impacted by COVID, no question. I know, in particularly in some of our councils and on Bord Pleanála, we've had inspectors out, we've had people out, and that has delayed it too. But we need an efficient system.
Yeah. Objections from people who don't live near a proposed development.
I'll bring forward the most comprehensive review of planning since the year 2000, and that'll come forward this autumn. And it's not only a review by way of a report that we can all pick through. It'll be brought forward with the legislation that we need, and subject to government decisions, we will be making some significant decisions within that space to make sure that we have an efficient planning system that's effective.
Stop people objecting?
No, I think
who are not affected directly.
I'm not going to preempt what's in the review, but what I would say to you is this: we need an open and transparent planning system. That's why I got rid of the SHDs, the strategic developments, the fast track planning, and brought that back to the councils, because residents did feel frustrated that applications were going straight to the board, and the only recourse that they felt if they had an issue was to go to the courts. That's not the way it should be. But I want to make sure we have a planning system where people get their say, that it's a plan-led system. So where you have a development plan, that is very clear to people what is happening in the field next door, what's due to happen to their town, their village, or their part of the city. So since the year 2000, there have been many changes to the Planning Act. And because of those many changes, some anomalies or grey areas have been created. And I want to ensure that they're removed. So with government support, and subject to when the review will be finished, which will be by the autumn, as I said, I'll be bringing forward some significant positive changes that will ensure that our planning system is efficient, okay, and can support the delivery of the homes and infrastructure that we actually need as a state, whilst respecting the fact that people do have a right and should have a right to make their observations.
The Housing Committee, the Rockless Housing Committee, they're proposing this new tax on vacant properties. Are you going to do that?
Well, tomorrow they're to publish the report. So I've seen just some details of the report in media. We intend to bring forward a vacant property tax. I've discussed this on your show before. It is one of the action points within Housing for All. The data from the local property tax collection is being worked through by revenue and the Department of Finance. And the whole idea of that was finding out why properties were vacant. Mm-hmm. Okay,
but the Department of Finance say there's a very limited, or to have a very limited impact.
Well, I haven't seen
on housing supply.
Well, I think there's two things. We want to make sure that in vacancy that we support bringing vacant properties back into use, and we're actually being quite successful in certain towns and villages across the country. And we're starting to do that, and that's good because we've a resource of vacant property that should be put to use, so we can get people living back in our cities, living back in our towns.
So you might need the tax if it's happening
already. No, I think, to be fair, that my view is that we have very clearly set out in Housing for All that we will bring forward a vacant property tax based on the data collection from revenue. That is being worked through right now. I haven't seen the data. That's being dead straight, which I have not yet. That's a matter that we will discuss in government, and myself and Minister Donoghue will. Mm-hmm. Because I do think, in fairness, that where be it 90, 120,000 or 30,000 properties that are vacant, we need to make sure, and there are, and if you look at all different reports, there's a variance within what people believe is vacant or otherwise. And where homes can be brought in, if someone is simply not using that, I believe there should be a tax.
But there'll be a cost factor, won't there, to collecting that tax?
Well, Claire, I haven't...
So you've had to judge all of that and weigh it up.
No, I think to be fair, I'll wait to see the data, and we'll make a decision at that stage in cooperation with government partners. All I do know is that some of the changes we've made to planning already, I've been in Waterford and Limerick and Cork and other places whereby Dublin City actually just in the last couple of weeks, where we've been repurposing old buildings very successfully, where we've been getting people back living.
But if you're doing that already, I don't know why you'd need the property tax, especially as the Department of Finance said that the vacant property tax could distract from the need to significantly accelerate the building of new housing.
I'm not going to comment on reports that have come out that I haven't seen. I'm going to await the final data that we have. All I say to you is that we believe it's not the silver bullet, but as part of the response to ensure the vacant property is brought back into use, yes, there should be some carrots like the Croíochána Villages and Towns Fund, where we're going to provide grants to people to be able to take a vacant property, to buy a vacant property. We're going to help them, with finance to be able to do that property up.
What did you make of that headline about that scheme yesterday? Buyers can flip state-backed apartments and keep the profits.
Let me just finish the point I'm making. So we're going to help homeowners to be able to buy those properties and do them up. We do need a stick on the other side, and I believe we do.
Cities,
which is about activating dormant planning permissions. One of the big points of discussion over the last number of years is that people can't live in our five main cities because you can't build apartments to buy. And a lot of the apartments are built
because it's too expensive for the developer, which is why you're going to give up to €144,000 per unit to developers.
No, we're not. And you see, that has been something that's been peddled predictably by the opposition, that this is some type of gift to the developer. It's not. It's a support to the person who's purchasing it, an owner-occupier. We're targeting 5,000 apartments in our five major cities of dormant planning permissions. And there's no reveal in this article. It was like it's revealed this has happened. We published all of this on the department website, which is the expressions of interest. We need to activate and get moving.
Just going back to what you said there about this is not a developer grant. This is something that the developer has to apply for. I know the deadline is coming up in June. It's not the buyer who's applying for it. It is the developer.
Let me explain what's happening. It's open for expressions of interest right now, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's open for a six-week period. The scheme itself still needs to be fully signed off. But to see, of those 80,000 planning permissions, 40,000 of which are in this city, many of which, the majority, by the way, are build to sell, not build to rent, which again was an inaccuracy put out by the opposition. Expressions of interest will be brought forward on an open book basis. So not applying for the grant. What happens is, if a scheme is approved, and if a particular apartment development is approved, the support per unit will be assessed on an open book basis, which means all the costs are shown. But that support goes to the purchaser. So for argument's sake, if an apartment costs €350,000 to build a two-bedroom apartment, and the support that was given towards that one unit was €100,000.
To the developer.
No. The support.
But you have to get it built in the first place, and the developer is saying to you, I can't afford to build it.
The support is passed on to the purchaser
because the price is lower.
Yes, exactly. So it goes from 350 to 250. Okay, so it means then that we're able to build that that unit. By the way, you can use the other affordability supports that are in place, like the First Home Shared Equity. So the support does not go to the builder or developer.
And the person who buys that apartment then can sell that on at a profit and keep the profit.
With restrictions within the first 10 years. And again, that's something that we've been very clear about.
Do they have to profit share with the state?
There are clawbacks very clearly in relation to the amount, particularly right up to year 10, there will be clawbacks on any appreciation within it. Let's think about, like, why are we doing this? We're doing this because we cannot build apartments within our cities for people to buy. This will help. This is an activation measure which is time bound and is targeted at 5,000 apartments across our five main cities. And it'll be done in an open book, very transparent way. Now, the people who will criticise it will also be the ones who are criticising the fact that they believe there's too much build to rent. And these are the same people, by the way, who said last week that it was it was too generous for developers, and now they're saying it's too generous for the purchasers.
Mm-hmm. We can't keep 80% of the profits they make, can they?
What I'm saying to you, in year 0 to 10, there will be significant clawbacks on any appreciation,
20%.
On any appreciation in the price. Mm-hmm. But let's say this, Claire. We need to use all the tools and all the weapons in our armory to activate supply. And supply is increasing now.
Okay.
But if anyone's to tell you that there is not an issue with building apartments within our main cities, they wouldn't be telling you the truth. So the main opposition spokesperson, for argument's sake, his counter to this is to say, well, we would actually take those sites and we would flip them. He's talking about flipping sites and taking them, getting developers to build them and flip them over to someone else and say that we will control the costs. We're controlling the costs here, but who's getting the support? Okay. The person who is renting right now at the moment or living at home with their folks, like, why are we doing it? Because we want to be able to give people a real pathway to home ownership. And this is just one of a number of initiatives the government are taking.
We are almost out of time, and I just want to talk to you about short-term lets. We checked DAF this morning. There are 821 places to rent, long-term rental properties available right across the state. There's a huge imbalance, isn't there, between the number of long-term rentals and short-term lets, the Airbnb-style places. What are your plans to deal with that?
Very shortly, I'll have additional legislation that I'm bringing forward in this space. Anyone who's a second property, by the way, already the regulations from 2019 are pretty strong, but I don't believe are being adhered to that. You know, Airbnb as it used to be, or short-term lets, if someone was going away on holidays and rents out their home for a couple of weeks or a room in their home, that shouldn't be an issue. But the idea that we have a situation where we've multiples of short-term lets versus long-terms in all our major cities is not a sustainable situation. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually concluding work on some quite significant amendments in that space, which I'll bring in before the summer recess.
The Sinn Féin say they've done the work for you because they have this motion tomorrow evening.
They haven't really, to be honest. All they're bringing forward...
Let's look at the idea, because they say they're going to fine the rental agencies who advertise the short-term rentals without the appropriate planning permission in place. And you said yourself that the 2019 legislation isn't being adhered to.
We need to do more than that. A fine isn't going to do it, and that's what we're just going to... Certainly, they've not done the work for me on this, but I welcome any realistic proposals that can help the situation. I intend to go further than that, to be honest with you.
But it'd be a quick way to make some progress on it.
I think, to be fair, Claire, what I'll be bringing forward would be more significant than what the opposition, who haven't raised this issue in a number of years and have come forward with an idea, finds. And that's fine. I will look at that. What I propose to be doing will go significantly further than that. And I think we do need to do that. Because if we looked at through the pandemic, what happened when the short-term rental properties came back into longer-term rental, it had a positive effect with supply. But fundamentally across the board, changes in short-term lets will help, but we need new supply. So the party that you mentioned who are bringing forward these proposals, and I look at them in good faith, are the party that continues to object to new developments right across this country, including build to rent. So they need to get their house in order on that. But I will look at that legislation, and I do believe we can do more on the short-term let side.
Minister, we've got to leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.